Good evening, everybody. James McKenna here with My Science Hour for May 9th, 2024. And a few things about your individual security. I'm going to talk about that first, a couple other topics to cover after that. The insurance company, and I'm going to just be brief with this because I covered this a lot a year ago or so, but the insurance company started basically a scam. They colluded with... That's the best word I can drum up at this time. But they colluded with the climate change people. And what they basically said was that because the climate change is increasing and there are going to be more hurricanes, and there are going to be more, you know, bad weather and everything, which really is not true because they're dealing with faulty theories. The idea that hurricanes are somehow... created and managed and augmented by warm water is simply false. It is a false theory. It's one of those garbage tier two science things that permeates the airwaves. And you have, I'll be honest with you, when I talk about meteorologists, geologists, archaeologists, those professions which have kind of been dominated by special interest groups, there's so many things wrong with that, and especially what causes the weather. One of my books, I was just looking at this the other day. I think it's in the Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book. It was a monologue that I did back in the early 2000s, maybe before even. And it was the title was, "You Can't Predict the Weather If You Don't Know What Causes the Weather." And so I went through this whole litany of the theories at the time of what causes bad weather. And it's no different today. They're still talking about the same ridiculous concepts that somehow hot water, or if water heats up, that's going to cause this tremendous increase in hurricanes, and that they're going to go much farther north and much farther inland. It's garbage science. The insurance companies basically were feeding off the climate change baloney and saying that, oh, there's going to be more hurricanes, they're going to go farther north, they're going to go farther inland, and even if you're way inland, the tornadoes are going to be bigger and worse and bad and everything bad. So they got to raise the insurance rates. Well, that's the old protection racket, you know, back to downtown Chicago or New York. Back in the day, it's still happening. You know, the boys would go into a shop, mom and pop shop, you know, a little deli or something, and say, you know, Pop, things are getting bad out there. You should get our protection, and then, you know, things will be cool here. We'll protect you. You know, and Pop goes, well, you know, talked it over with the wife, and we've been here 30 years. We haven't had any problems. All the neighborhood know us. They're all good people. You know, we've never had any problems, so I don't think we're going to take your protection. So the next night, you know, the place gets broken into and all busted up. And the next day, the boys come in and go, geez, Pop, you know, if you'd have taken our protection, this wouldn't have happened. You know, we'd have taken care, you know, we would have protected you. That's our protection business. So it's the old protection racket. That's what insurance is. So anyway... They're going to protect you from the big bad climate change wolf, and all of those terrible storms. So anyway, they did raise the rates, and there were people in Florida who went from $1,000 a year on a little, maybe $300,000 house. You know, there's lots of them in Florida, and people, elderly people living there on a very fixed budget. Their insurance went from $1,000 a year to $7,000 a year. Oh, my goodness. And this is happening in other states, too, farther north, up in the Carolinas, going inland. And so property insurances are getting very expensive. And, of course, if you have a loan on your house, you can't just say, well, I don't want the insurance, which people did. I know people indirectly that friends of friends, so to speak, that had a house down in the Keys in Florida where that big hurricane hit a year or so ago, year 2 years ago maybe, and they did not have insurance on a $1 million home, and all that is left is a cement pad. So, you know, but the other flip side of this now is that the insurance companies, there are more and more reports of the insurance companies not paying. So they jack up the rates to charge more, and then when it comes time to put in a claim, they're like, you know, we don't know you. And the thing is, if you have a loan on your house, the bank has the right to, if you don't buy insurance, they'll be notified right away if the insurance, you know, because they're in cahoots with the insurance companies. And if you drop, as a homeowner, you drop your house insurance, of course, the bank wants its protection, which, you know, you can understand from a business point of view. But the bank then can go out and purchase insurance, and it's going to cost you a lot more if the bank buys it than if you purchased it. But anyway, that's kind of the update. Now, I've repeated some things that I've said before and talked about maybe a year and a half ago at the beginning of this, where they started ramping up this climate change deal. But the new twist on this is that they're not going to pay off. The other thing you have to understand is the insurance companies have this, they propagate this myth that they receive your premium and they sit there and then the claims come in and they pay off the claims and they have a little slice left. And that's their profit. No, 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 boys and girls. What goes on is you pay your premium, they take that money and they invest in real estate, high-end commercial real estate. That means office buildings, sky-rises that are commercial property. People are not living there. People are not paying rent there. And they rent this out. You know, we're talking $1 million a month, pieces of like a half of a floor on a 40th floor of some high-rise in the middle of a city. You know, $1 million a month, and that's pure gravy. That's just, oh my goodness, it's just pure gravy money into these companies. So they're making a boatload of money not related to you paying your premium. So they give this, oh, poor us, the poor insurance companies deal, and they're just making money hand over fist off of your investing your money. And the other interesting thing is that if you had a cooperative, an insurance co-op, and went out and just self-insured, basically, and then when there were losses, pay out of the fund, your insurance would cost a lot less. I don't have a specific number, but a lot. Okay, just wanted to mention something more and more lately. There's been rumble about a couple things in space science, astronomy, astrophysics. When is Planet 9? Remember back in the 2000s, Planet X? Ooh, everybody was worried about Planet X, and I finally wrote a book on that because I lived through that whole era being a comet person and realizing that Planet X would look like a comet. And all the disinformation was to dissuade people from looking at comets when it comes to things like Planet X. The people in the CIA, the people high up in Tier 1 science, they know I'm right about my plasma discharge comet model. They just don't want you to know about this. I just made a comment. This is kind of cute because the reason I'm talking about this is there's some clown, I'm not going to mention names, on the internet, and you know, these guys, they get their little PhD, and then all of a sudden they start their YouTube channel, and they're going to tell you all about space, you know, the nouveau Carl Sagan types. And so this joker was started talking about Planet 9, which is the political correct term today, because Pluto was purposefully demoted as a planet so that the next planet, so that if there are only eight planets, Pluto being the old ninth planet, but no more. And they did this on purpose because as new planets were being discovered by the thousands, literally, remember there was when you went to school, you learned there were nine planets, and you, if you were really good, you could name them Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter. Jupiter is not a planet, by the way, it's a small star. You know, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. But Pluto got demoted because they started finding other planets out there. And then they called them minor planets, and then they called them Kuiper Belt objects, because all of a sudden they started finding big stuff out there, which they don't want to talk about. They literally had about 1,000 planets discovered when they just shut the door on it and said, "We're not," and that's from just looking in a small portion of the sky out there. So this region outside of Pluto is just filled with literally thousands of planets, and they can't explain why. Because the original model of the solar system, the 9 planets formed from an accretion disk, a disk of dust and stuff that's spinning around the prototype sun, and they formed into planets by gravitational accretion, and that was the and that's supposedly the story of how the planets formed. But all of a sudden you got 1,000 that are way out there that are not in this nice, neat little plane, or kind of neat little plane, it's really not. But and the reason for that, the reason all the planets are in the plane is because if they're below the plane of the planets, then Jupiter pulls up on them, and if they're up above the plane, Jupiter pulls down on them. So they're constantly working their way into the what's known as the ecliptic. That's the orbital plane of Earth. And if you were an alien coming in from a different star system, coming into our star system, you would not use Earth as the basis of your solar system coordinate system. You would use probably Jupiter, or maybe a combination of all the planets, but not Earth itself, which is just this little speck of dust out here in the middle of nowhere. Anyway, I wanted to read my comment, which, by the way, got taken down. Let me see if I can find it here. Okay, where is it? I'm sorry. Just a second. Okay, here it is. Sorry about that. So this was from the title of the video. It was New Evidence for Existence of Planet 9, and Here's What We Now Know. And so anyway, I put this comment in because there were thousands of comments. This guy has like 1.3 million subscribers. And so, explaining, so there's a lot of interest in the general public there about space, outer space and space things. But when you look at the comments also, they're pretty stupid. Most of the comments are pretty rudimentarily stupid. But here is my comment about this guy chattering about Planet 9, and he really didn't have any relevant information at all. Here's my comment, so you can hear it, but nobody else will see it because it got taken down. And I think it's because I called the guy a clown, which is, you know, offensive, personal attack, was, you know, not required for what I was saying. But anyway, I get pretty agitated at these people, especially these young PhD types, who really don't know anything. They're book learned, you know, to use an old-fashioned term. Anyway, here's what I wrote. I stopped reading when you started talking about near solar system black holes. Basically, your history is pure garbage and you have no idea what you are talking about, as with typical younger clowns like you. You have absolutely no idea of all that went on regarding the real search for Planet X. And I use the Roman numeral 10, or X. Starting in the 1800s and culminating with the Harrington Naval Observatory NASA-funded searches and ultimately discovery. I have to laugh at your politically correct term Planet 9, since they had to demote Pluto from being a planet, because the next planet would then be Planet 10 or Planet X. The bottom line is you have no idea what you're talking about. Do everybody a favor and stop pretending like you know something. That was my comment. And of course it got axed. But anyway, pretty much anything with my name on it, and this goes back to the very earliest days of YouTube, anything with my name on it got axed, and that's because YouTube, from the very beginning, it still is a CIA construct. So, anyway, another thing that's showing up a lot in the news lately is dark matter and dark energy. Oh, they've discovered something. Oh, a new finding proves dark energy. No, it's all garbage. See, let me just give you a quick review here. Going back to, this is started a long time ago, maybe in the 30s, maybe even earlier than that, when they first started seeing galaxies and they realized that these were big structures of stars. And then they had spectrometers on telescopes so they could measure redshifts and blueshifts, etc. And so when they took the redshift of the galactic arms, they did not match Newtonian physics. In other words, what their belief was is that this system of stars should be spinning around like a record disk, like a solid structure. And so anyway, that didn't work out. And so anyway, then they made estimates based on Keplerian orbits, 1 over r squared, Newtonian gravity, etc. And that didn't work out either. So they said, well, if we just put this invisible mass in here close to the nucleus, and we'll just say that there's this field of material in the galactic plane that's causing a distortion of the gravitational field, then everything is better. So they coined the term missing mass. Now it's dark matter, dark energy. So anyway, the modern version of this is dark matter, and which is supposed to make up a certain percent of the universe, and another 90% is dark energy, and then real matter that we're used to using when you sit down at the kitchen table and touch the table, and that's matter. That makes up a very small portion of the universe, and that's because this explanation is because none of their observations fit the theoretical work. Okay, so at any rate, this whole idea of the missing mass and missing it converted into dark matter is something that's needed to patch up the theories that don't explain what we see in the universe. And so when I was at Cornell, my very first peer-reviewed published paper was called Continuing Galactic Evolution. You can find it on the internet. Just look up J. M. McCanney, Continuing Evolution. It'll pop up, and it's was published in Astrophysics Journal. So, and that's when I was in the, you'll see J. M. McCanney, Department of Mathematics, Cornell University. And you'll see the, this is a paper I wrote to explain how galaxies form, so you don't need the missing mass. And, I got a very severe negative reaction from the Cornell Astrophysics Department, who was heavily invested in missing mass technology. So anyway, this goes back a long ways. And the end result is that there is really no evidence for missing mass of any kind. They can't even define it. They can't even tell you what it is. Okay, I'm going to switch gears a little bit here and just kind of pat myself on the back a little bit. Here's an email that I got from a listener, from a customer who bought the JMCC water filter, HI filters. These are the little ones for the Berkey-style gravity water filters. And so anyway, this letter was written to one of the hosts where I'm a guest regularly. This one went to Jeff Rentz. But here's the email. It said, earlier this week, I received a new set of filters for my do-it-yourself Berkey-style water filter, which was constructed as set forth in the article on the professor's website. So on my website, I discuss how to buy plastic containers and make your own water filter and put the spigot in, and we sell the spigots as part of a kit. So anyway, this guy apparently bought one of these. He goes on to say, just want to thank you for bringing this product to the attention of your listeners and to let you know how refreshing it is to deal with a real customer service provided by a live human being so knowledgeable with the product, instead of having to first listen to a computer repeat a list of numbers to enter via your phone before hopefully reaching a live person. Jeff, I really like this product and join you in recommending it to your other listeners. Anyway, thank you. The customer happy with his product and service. And that's the thing, too, is that when you call the water filter company, actually somebody, a live person, answers the phone. And a lot of times it's myself because I'm sitting here. I do a lot of work, and that's one of my kind of my policies is to answer the phone. And people are very courteous, too. I must say that. They don't call up to just talk about, you know, they read a book and they wanted to talk about something. No, they call up. They typically want to talk about water filters and what, you know, questions they have. But it's refreshing, I'm sure, for people in this day and age. I don't remember the last time I called some company and got a live person that actually answered. Really, it's like some kind of, a, thank you for calling. Our, you know, our menu has changed. Please listen to all the options. You know the routine. So anyway, thank you from that customer. And just to mention that we have a little bit of a sale right now on the MR5 whole house water filters. It's $350 off for the best deal, which is the MR5 and this UV sterilizer, the extra add-on filter. And so typically it's $2,100 for the best deal. And right now it's $1,750, and you can get another 5% off using the coupon code JMCC. And if you're buying the gravity filters, the gravity replacement filters for a gravity kitchen filter, then that's either a 4-pack for $189, that includes shipping, or a 10-pack for $399. And for the anything over $300, you can use the JMCC coupon code. So that would give you another 5% or $20 off that $399 price tag. And clear water is probably the best gift you can give to yourself. Is it, if nothing else, some people are financially having a more of a difficult time, then you can get like the $189 four filter elements. You can use one filter element at a time in the gravity style filter, because they filter up to 50 gallons per day, so you're not going to use those up anytime soon, but you get the water very quickly. You can put 2 gallons in that stainless steel gravity container, and in 1 hour, boom, it's filtered, and the best filter on the market. Okay, enough of that. JMCCWaterFilters.com. And by the way, right now, my main page, my traditional page, which goes back into the 90s, literally, jmccannyscience.com, which the short URL, jmccsci.com. You can get to all the other subpages from there, including the water filter page, jmccsci.com. And check out my education packages. They got the books there, the 14 different books that are available for sale. I have the lecture series. I have the DVDs that have been converted. Those are for sale. So all of this stuff is for sale on the page. So go check it out. Okay, now I'm going to talk about computer security. So these are some topics that have come up recently. And one is an issue with VPNs. Virtual private networks. Okay, what's a virtual private network? Well, many of you probably use them. Maybe you don't know exactly how it works. But essentially, here's the problem. When you go onto your computer, there's a MAC address, which is your actual machine address. That's a number given to your computer, literally. And then there's the IP address, which is what you're given when you when you go out on the internet, you're given basically an identification number that identifies you as a user and using the internet. Okay, so what happens is you go to a web page. Okay, well, the internet can see that that's you going to that web page. So it goes off to Google Land and clocks your visit to that web page. So it's okay. So say you go to Amazon and you're looking for socks. Okay, all of a sudden, all the people who are advertising for socks Google, because they want to make money off of advertisement, goes to that page and starts to, or all the pages where they're advertising for socks, and they start feeding you little pop-up advertisements on your screen for socks. You know, or you want to take a trip, and you go in and do a search for, you know, airline trips or vacation in Honduras, say. Okay. So then all of a sudden you start getting all these pop-ups from resorts in Honduras. And that's tracking what you're doing. And it's related, because when they see that you're on the internet and you're active, okay, here's this guy, this woman, they before were looking for this trip to Honduras, they were looking for socks, and they start feeding you advertisement or, you know, sending you to social media for socks, clubs, whatever it is, they're tracking you and what you're doing. So to avoid that, people have set up what are known as virtual private networks. And so, for example, and this happens too when you're out of the country, say you want to log into your bank, but your bank has a thing that they don't accept any entries into their bank from foreign IP addresses, from something that's outside of the 48 or the 50 states of the United States. So you can tunnel through that. You can get a VPN in, say, New York City. And so even though you're in Paris, it looks like you're in New York City. So you can then go and get into your bank and override that rule. So there are all kinds of uses for VPNs. So in the world, I always say, in the world of cyber security, which I worked in for 25 years of my career, remember that after I left Cornell, I did spend some years teaching more in the university level, state university system, physics and astronomy. I actually taught astronomy at the university level in one of the state university systems. But the majority of my work career after Cornell was in industry, where I worked for private industry in dealing with telecommunications, encryption, computer security, and all of those topics. I was basically a high-level engineer, and some of the terminology you might use is network engineer. But computer security is something I happen to know quite a bit about, computer protocols. I was on the 602 Ethernet committee back in the day, back in the 1980s when it was being formulated, to define the 602 Ethernet standard, which is the cord you plug in from your modem to your computer. That's an Ethernet cord. It's used mainly for digital transmission, very secure, very robust connector. But above that, there's a whole telecommunications protocol that goes on top of that wire. Okay, so at any rate, computer security is something I happen to know a lot about. Now people get a VPN and they can pay for this, and usually it comes as part of a service. Like you have a firewall, or you have other kinds of computer protection protecting your surfing on the internet that you don't go to dangerous pages, etc. So there's all kinds of things that come along with these packages, and including VPN. Or you can buy a VPN service as a standalone. There are those companies out there also who sell VPNs as a standalone product. And you can put that on your computer. And then what it does is you go out and you want to surf the internet. So you can see the internet just as anybody else can see it, but you haven't picked anything to go to yet. Okay, so now what happens is you set up your VPN connection, and you could be in the United States, you could be outside the United States, it doesn't matter, because when the signal goes out to go to where you want to search and go to, it's coming from a server that changes your IP address, and they have these revolving IP addresses that are not yours. It's not your IP address for connecting you into the internet. So it's a step between you and the internet, and it allows you to be a virtual person without being identified or tracking where you've been Or like I say, if there are maybe websites that require you to be in a certain physical location to use the website, you can get a VPN connection. And a lot of times, it's not just New York City. You could have any one of 20 major cities where you could connect in. They have servers in all these different locations. So anyway, that's basically a talky way of talking about what VPNs do. But when they take in your information, then they route it. And recently, there was a group called Leviathan Security Group that discovered a way that people have been hacking into VPNs for a, potentially a long time, getting your information, and people are paying for this VPN service thinking that they're protected when in fact they're not. And so, and this is mainly for you, the person. The qualification at the end of the article was written by a gentleman, and he qualified it saying that if you're in a private network, then you don't have this issue because you're within your private network. You're not out on the public internet. And so that's one qualification. So if you're dealing with, say, a corporation that has its own intranet that is private, then it's not an issue for you. Although I always tell people it's... If you put your plug your machine or your phone into some kind of public network, you are vulnerable, I guarantee you. Okay, so at any rate, what does this mean to you? And a lot of people have VPNs, and that's the biggest question. What do you have to do about this? I think that these companies very soon will have patches to prevent exploitation from these this hacking technique. What the hackers would do is they would come in to a server, a VPN server, and they would wait until the person's VPN subscription had to be renewed. And it was at the renewal point where they were able to get in to the pipeline and grab a hold of the information and then route it off out the side of the server through another connection. And connection meaning a logical connection. Okay, so at any rate, what do you have to do? I would say there's two things you could do. Look up the Leviathan Security Group, and they have some videos on this. Some articles have just come out, and you're going to see this in the press, that VPNs are not safe. But like anything, offense and defense, as soon as something offensive comes into the picture, then the defense can be built to prevent that. And then it's just a matter of the offense, the hackers, working their way in and eventually finding a way around that. It's like the spy versus spy thing, the old Mad magazine, spy versus spy. For every measure, there's a countermeasure. And it's been the way in warfare or any other human activity almost since the beginning of time, business, etc., where somebody would invent a technique and think, you know, you can live off this for the rest of your life. And lo and behold, somebody comes along and breaks it or finds a way to get in there and make some of your money. Okay, so at any rate, what do you do? Number one, check with your VPN provider, ask them if they have modified their system to prevent the hacking that's going on in the VPN networks. And if they come back and they don't even know anything about it, you know that they're not dealing with a full deck of cards. This is something that anybody involved in VPN networks or sale of VPN network as a application, they very much should know about this. And the other one is to check out the Leviathan Security Group. And I am not representative of Leviathan Security Group or anything. I'm just telling you that those are the people who have taken credit for finding this, for discovering this hacking technique, and are basically blowing the whistle. So I suspect that VPNs very shortly will have fixes to prevent this. But it's very disconcerting to know that this has been going on potentially for a long time, and I don't know particular VPN services, if they have been affected, if some of them have been affected, if all of them have been affected, But of course, there's some large players out there too. Okay, so switching gears just a little bit here, I'm going to talk about secure socket layer, and this is called abbreviated, of course, SSL. And when you go to a web page, originally back in the old days, the original days of the internet, http://www.yourwebpagename.com or whatever, .net, .org, started out. And then someone, and this is the way security things happen, the old, once again, it's the old protection racket. The secure socket layer came in, and when you talk in terms of computer telecommunication protocols, they talk in terms of layers. And so you have a protocol layer, or it's also called a stack, but you have you go through a layer of protocol, and something happens, something's built onto the message, a header, a footer, a certain code or a certain set of bits or something, and then it goes to the next layer and the next layer. And by the time you get done, you call it a frame. And so the frame has many different components to the header and the trailer, and then you have error correction bytes at the very end, polynomials, and that calculate a certain value, things that check for the integrity of the transmission, etc. And then you have the leading bits that are always the same. That means here comes the message. So anyway, this entire protocol that happens every time a message goes back and forth. And then you have acknowledgments that, yes, I got this message, and they count them in order 1, 2, 3, 4. And if one is missing, then the receiving end goes, well, I had a corrupted frame here, retransmit such and such. When it's retransmitted, then it goes back and puts it back in order, etc. And all of this is going on while your information is being transmitted back and forth. And so at the very beginning, when you get to a website, somebody along the way decided that there would be a possibility of you being hacked. In other words, when you first log into that web page, you're trying to make a physical connection and a logical connection with that web page server and a particular web page that's on that server. It might be hundreds, thousands of web pages that are on a given server if it's a commercial server. And then that talks back to you and sets up a connection. So the problem is that's a very vulnerable part of this whole process, because that's when hackers can get in there in the middle of your conversation, setting up this session with the server, with the web page that you want to go to. It's very vulnerable. And so somebody came up with the bright idea of putting encryption, or a layer of, let's just put it this way, a layer of security there. And it became known as Secure Socket Layer, SSL. And if you have a web page, you either get that as part of your service from your internet provider, your ISP, your internet service provider, or maybe you have to pay extra per year, an annual fee, to have SSL. And if you do not have that little S up there, now instead of http://, it's https://, and then your web name. And people are getting away from, by the way, putting www in there. It's kind of like World Wide Web. Yeah, really? We know that. You don't have to type it every time. So they're getting away from actually using that. It was very necessary back in the early days, but they're actually getting away from that. And so the end result is that that initial setup, when you have the initial setup of you and your computer talking to an application on a server, that is being set up in a secure socket layer. That's what that's all about. The only problem is it's based on public key encryption. The problem with public key encryption is that it's based on prime numbers, and the prime number security codes have been broken for a long time, literally almost probably 17 years since I published my book, Calculate Primes, which gives a formula process for calculating prime numbers directly. The public key encryption were based on the assumption and the belief, let's put it that way. And once again, you get back to this situation where the computer industry, there were scientists, mathematicians who made calculations and assumptions that somehow computing prime numbers would be very difficult and would take a lot of computer time. Therefore, large prime numbers are very safe things to use in public key encryption. And it turned out to be not the case, as was the case with VPNs. This is kind of the point. These stories go together. This very much affects you. Every day you log into the computer, every time you go on your phone and you go to your bank, do phone banking, every time you order an Uber, everything you do over the internet has that socket layer, SSL socket layer, initiating the session so that nobody can jump in on your call. The only thing is here, there's another issue here, is that your call to buy a pizza or get an Uber is probably not prime time for some hacker. They're not going to be sitting outside your home waiting for you to buy underwear on Amazon. It's not a big priority. It's not a moneymaker. Getting into your bank is a priority. And so, or even getting into your bank account is probably not a big priority unless you're, got millions stored in different bank accounts. And so banking tends to be fairly secure in that respect. But the problem with SSL, and large corporations use this also, the problem is that the encryption methods are easily broken today. And it's using, I wrote a book, in fact, it's called Breaking RSA Codes. RSA Codes is another term for public key encryption based on prime numbers. And the whole idea is that you have a big number that has only two factors, which are large prime numbers. Okay, so here's the situation, and I, in my book, Breaking RSA Codes, I go through the process of how to break the RSA codes, how it can be done very quickly. The problem is that big corporations and encryption companies, the companies that are selling encryption software and applications, are still using public key encryption as if there was not a problem with it. That's why you're finding hacking going on. And the reason they're selling it, I describe in the book, is because the NSA and the CIA, who are the main people hacking into and listening, eavesdropping on everything you do to make sure you're not a terrorist, their tools, I will call them, their tools for hacking into your computer are all set. And if some of these companies selling encryption went out and actually sold you real encryption software applications that were not based on public key encryption, then the CIA and the NSA could not get into your computer, and they don't want that. So they have these companies selling bogus computer security protection software packages, etc. And here's the issue. If you can quickly calculate prime numbers, then the factorization into these two prime factors of a large number is relatively easy. And I go through, I explain how to do it in the book. And then I give a bunch of examples and actually some example problems that a person could do on their own. But basically, with a laptop computer, you could easily break the RSA codes and therefore the SSL security that goes into your initial setup when you do go from your computer out to some application or some web page on the internet. But like I say, chances are there's nobody sitting there outside your door trying to tap into your computer to get your encryption exchange code. They're not going to do that because you're not a big player. I often use the example like this. Imagine you are a soldier and you've got all your uniform on and you're shielding and you're vest and everything that's going to protect you. And but it's really not enough to protect you against the enemy arrows or gunfire, whatever it might be, swords or whatever. It's some protection, but it's not very good protection. Now, if you're a soldier and you're walking down the road and you're the only guy and you got a bag of gold on your side, then you are a prime target. Somebody's going to kill you and take your gold. Okay, but let's say you're a soldier and you're in a pack of 10,000 soldiers and you're walking down the road. The enemy has a limited amount of ability to pick you out of the crowd and shoot you and take your gold because you're one of a 10,000. You're one in 10,000 soldiers walking down the road. So the chances they're going to pick you are pretty small. And now you go on the internet, there's millions of people, hundreds of millions of people using the internet constantly. Who's going to pick you out of the crowd in your lowly little economic existence to try and hack into it? Well, it's not really an issue. So you could go out and surf the internet all you want, and you might be a little bit worried about somebody sending you a few too many pop-up ads. But the reality is nobody's going to try and break into your bank account or whatever. It's not worth it. You don't have enough there. It's not worth $50 or $100 or $1,000 or even $10,000. They want the big places. They want the JCPenney's. They want the Sears. They want the Wells Fargo banks. These are the places that get hacked into because they have ignorant IP, IT people, and they have no idea that they're installing security software in their computer systems that are hackable, easily hackable. So at any rate, that's a little bit about computer security. Like I say, something I worked on professionally 25 years of my life. And one of the nice things about the jobs I had, mainly two, one for about a 10-year period, where we were designing IBM front-end processors. That was back in the legacy IBM days. And I was a principal systems engineer over both hardware and software. And I had a lot to do with high-level design and managing projects that, from an engineering standpoint, not as a manager of a project, but engineering managing, it's a totally different thing. That's making sure everything gets done right physically in the circuitry. We designed our own circuit boards. We had our own instruction sets. We had our own transmission protocols. We had our own security and encryption, everything. And I was the person that really did all of that. You know, I was on top of all of that. From a top-down viewpoint over the engineering projects and products that got marketed and sold. And then another, 15 years as an engineer in networking, dealing with the same type of thing, security, encryption, transmission protocols, making things run properly. And so the nice thing about those positions was that they were always looking for me, trying to find out my source of income because, after the Cornell years, they really didn't like me, and I continued to be very active in my science. And these positions allowed me to be basically hidden because high security positions, you're not advertised as being a public figure. And so that was one thing. And then secondly, it provided me with a relatively good existence for the period of my life that allowed me to continue with my science. Remember that when I went to American Geophysical Union meetings or other meetings, I was invited speaker to a lot of places where they paid my way. But there was a lot of things I did I had to pay my own way. I had to print my own posters. I had to print my own documents. I had to, put those all together and make a professional presentation, and that cost money, and I had the money. I had the money to continue, and that's when I could publish my own books. I could basically pursue my interests without having to be connected to government science in any shape or form. So I was able to remain as an independent scientist and work on my projects. And that's why I was able to define what I do. And that's the big problem with scientists and engineers in the real world today, is they work for some company or they work on some government project, and it's top down. Somebody's telling them what they got to do. Or at best, they go to some grant book that's put out by National Science Foundation or National Institute of Health or one of the other dozens of science agencies in the government, who puts out a catalog and says, these are the projects that we want to work on in the next year. And so these scientists or engineers or university professors go to this book and they go, yeah, we could do a quick, they call them quick and dirty. It was a quick experiment to get some kind of basic results, and then they write a proposal and they get grant money. And that's the way scientists live today. They need that government money to exist. And then, of course, publication is part of the racket, so that when you get your results, you do some publications, and that is just a numbers game. Oh, she died. She had 300-plus publications. Ooh, isn't that good? 300-plus publications. It must be good. No, 300 published papers is probably pure garbage. But the numbers, that's all that counts. And these people also don't own any of that. They have worked their lives as scientists, making all of this, doing all this work, potentially making discoveries, and they don't own a shred of it, none of it. I own all of my own material, and that's because of the way I work. I pay for it, I pay for the publications, and I'll tell you something, they hate you. In the peer review world, oh, you are worse than the devil. You are independent, and they live by that system and they die by that system. I just read a eulogy today. Woman had been, 30 years, 40 years working in all these different government positions, hundreds and hundreds of published papers. And guess what? A tier two scientist, really, she was marching down the road for most of it. Not owning a shred of what she did over her lifetime. Okay, so enough of that. Getting back to computer security, so the real question from my listeners would be, well, how does this affect me and what can I do? And the real reality is that I wouldn't worry about it too much. It's a really offensive to have these pop-up ads popping up. You go to look for a vacation or you go to look for buying socks on Amazon, and all of a sudden for the next week, sock ads are popping up all over your computer screen. But, you can have pop-up blockers. There's all kinds of things you can do. But I wouldn't worry too much that your VPN is leaking on you. It's probably not, the biggest thing you have to worry about is your identity. So you're logging into bank accounts, you're logging into say anything secure online. You don't want that information, that login information, to be compromised. So those are the kinds of things you would have to worry about. Getting back to the secure socket layer, there's nothing you can do about that. And chances are it's not going to affect you. Like I say, it's like the soldier marching down the road that is one of 10,000. Chances are the enemy arrow is not going to find you. But back to the VPN issue, I would not call my VPN just because they're probably going to get flooded with calls. But send them a nice email and say, you heard about this, the hacking of the VPN servers, and what have they done to assure that you have a secure connection? Okay. So that's about the size of that. And in general, computer security, when you're not using the internet, turn your machine either off or unplug the internet, or turn off your modem, etc., when you're not actively using it. Because when your computer is sitting there at night idle, people can actually get into it. That's one of the vulnerable periods of time that your computer faces. It's when you're not there actively doing something. And then also, you can change your passwords regularly. Just, you know, little things that you can do to keep your security, keep a backup of everything. That's the classic thing in computing, is that people don't have a backup and something goes south and then all of a sudden you got this big mess and you can't recover your important data, your important databases, etc. So always have a backup, and terabyte disks are cheap today. You know, you can get a 4 terabyte disk or even bigger today and just start storing everything on there. Don't keep a lot of stuff actually on your computer. Keep it off board onto like attached like USB terabyte drives and things like that. So you could move easily from one computer to another if it came down to your computer actually having a problem. And even that backup, unfortunately, the development of backup, backing up computer data has not evolved. It should be a very well-developed technology now, but it's not. I'm actually surprised that companies have not jumped on that and to fill that niche, but they haven't. I've gone out and looked. It's something I could do myself if I had proper funding. I could start a company and provide that service, and with good engineers, etc. But like anything, it's starting a company, getting the right staff, and I just don't have time for all of that in my life anymore. So at any rate, okay, so I'm running out of time here. Just want to remind you that there is that sale on the MR5 whole house water filter, the best deal. That includes the MR5 and the sterilizer, the UV sterilizer, typically $2,100. On sale for $350 off, $1,750, and that's enough to pay a good chunk of the plumber installation. And then another 5% off using the coupon code JMCC. That's coupon code JMCC. And the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, or you can go to the main page and check out my books and education package, everything that's for sale now on the webpage, jmccsci.com. Once again, that's jmccsci.com, 7 letters. The new webpage, I'm rather proud of it. It's a very nice page. It's a modern page. And being upgraded a little bit, there's a couple things that still need to be touched up. Go check that out, and the water filter page. And remember the grow towers. I have the grow towers there where you can grow vegetables, fruits in your basement, in your house. And I'm out of time. We'll talk to you next week. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.